Welcome to Trillions. I'm Joel Weber.
And I'm Eric Balchunas.
Eric, there's this reporter that we work with in Bloomberg News who came over to me at Bloomberg Business Week recently and was like, hey, do you know that QQQ makes no money for Invesco? And I go, Katie Greifeld, this is a story we need to do. So we're doing it. Katie Greifeld has written that story for Bloomberg Business Week. Eric, is that a shocker to you that QQQ makes no money for Invesco?
Well, it isn't because I'm an ETF nerd and this is sort of known in the nerd world, but for most people, it's probably a shocker. And it's really a great insight into how different structures exist in the ETF world. Not every ETF is an open-end fund. The early ones were structured a little differently and the way people are paid is different. But the other thing that I just find the Qs fascinating for many other reasons. So I'm always up
the
for
Q's
discussing
nickname,
this.
Short, yeah. Shorthand for QQQ, which this is a tech juggernaut, Eric.
To say the least. Our team and I, we always sort of like, we have an international team and we just, there's something about the Qs that captures like the American innovation that you just don't get in the rest of the world. And this index just, something about this index and the Nasdaq exchange attracts, you know, the tip of the spear of these kind of like juggernaut innovators that are, you know, largely an American thing. And that it just kicks ass, this index, this ETF, and it's a phenomenon.
But here's the thing, Katie kind of buried the lead when she came to me because Invesco has found a way to make money on the Qs. And we're going to talk about that. So joining us, Athanasios Serafagas of Bloomberg Intelligence, where he's an ETF analyst, as well as Katie Greifeld of Bloomberg News, where she's an ETF reporter, and so much more. This time on Trillions, the Qs. Athanasios, Katie, welcome back to Trillions.
Yeah, nice to see you guys.
Thrilled to be here.
Okay, give me a sense, Katie, how big is QQQ?
If you want a number, it's $200 billion in assets under management, give or take. I believe it's the fifth largest ETF out there, at least in the U.S., and it's one of the oldest, too. And I think you and Eric set up really nicely in the intro. It's just synonymous with tech investing at this point. You say the Qs, people know what you're talking about. It's one of those household names at this point.
Okay, so why does Invesco not make any money on its flagship product?
It's pretty wild. And like Eric said, if you're in the know, you know. But I'd been covering ETFs for 3.5 years. And this was actually born out of a tweet. Someone posted, I think it was Nate Geraci actually posted that the Qs are earning a ton of money this year because their expense ratio is 20 basis points, which is relatively high for a passive product. And obviously the AUM in the Qs has ballooned this year because tech is on fire. And then I think it was Ben Johnson from Morningstar who pointed out in the comments that Invesco earns no money off of that. And then from there, I fell down a rabbit hole. Athanasios has covered that if you look at the structure of the Qs, it's set up as a unit investment trust.
So that's important. UIT.
Very important. It's like the vestigial organ of the ETF industry. Baked into that expense ratio, part of it goes to the index provider, NASDAQ. Part of that goes to the trustee. The rest of that goes to marketing for whatever reason. Virtually none of it goes to Invesco.
Worth mentioning, Invesco sponsors this program. We would do this episode even if they didn't because it's fascinating. Athanasios, UIT, Unit Investment Trust. What is it? Why did it become a vestigial organ?
So when you look at when the first ETFs launched, like SPY is also a UIT, they were just cheaper. They were easier, you know, without getting too much into it.
SPY being the biggest ETF of all.
SPY being the biggest, yeah. And the first. So there's a few of them out there. They were just cheaper. You don't have to have a board of directors. So it's just a lot easier to launch these products. I also don't think issuers thought these products would be this big when they first brought them to market. So they're like, yeah, we're just going to offer this beta type investment. Maybe it gets some money into it. We can't charge on it. And that's the biggest, you know, Katie alluded to it. You can't make money on a UIT. So we really think about it. Like, I think this is like the biggest act of charity ever by Invesco. Because not only are they not making any money on it, it's like one of the best performing ETFs like ever. right? So you're getting all this, you're getting these really good returns, and this issuer is making almost no money on it. So it's just like this incredible, like, you know,
well,
situation.
Why don't they just change it and make it become a closed-in fund?
You can't, you know, there's ways around it. I think we sort of talked about they're trying to launch other products that are tied to the queues that are not in the UIT structure.
But a conversion, unlikely.
You know, maybe it could happen. I think we've talked about on other shows this Vanguard patent. So maybe if that opens up, maybe they can add a share class to it. I'm sure lawyers are working on it. But, you know, in the meantime, Invesco is trying to, you know, launch a different structure with QQQM that isn't a UIT. It's cheaper, and all that money goes to Invesco.
Well, just on that point, they could do a shareholder vote. They could. But talking to Invesco about it, I mean, it would just, there's tens of thousands of Q shareholders at this point, hard to track down. It would just be so outrageously expensive and complicated that it's pretty much impossible.
I think this is the longest that Eric Balchunas has ever been quiet. Eric, if you were Invesco and you were not making money off of your flagship product QQQ because of its structure and that you couldn't do anything about that, what would you do?
Yeah, it would be tough to see all the success that you're helping and you don't get that much, you know, a real big taste of it. It seems like all these other places are getting royalties off of the song you wrote in a weird way, even though Invesco did buy it. I mean, it wasn't their...
Okay, yeah, and Invesco, worth mentioning, did not create the product, Athanasios.
No, actually, the NASDAQ created it, just as like a beta offering, like to increase trading.
In 1999, like right before everything blew up in the dot-com world.
Yeah, exactly, and like, you know, before anyone really like, cared about ETFs or whatnot. And then eventually they sold it to PowerShares, and then PowerShares just rebranded to Invesco. So, you know, that's sort of been the timeline of it.
Wait, Invesco bought PowerShares.
It was so the way it worked was, and the reason they did this is, so that money they do make, quote unquote, it has to be spent on marketing. So when it was called the PowerShares QQQ, they had to call it PowerShares, right? But Invesco wanted to leverage that into all their products. So saying, we're going to drop the PowerShares name, only call it Invesco, and now we can stretch those marketing dollars to anything Invesco related. So it's really like a marketing ploy. So we sort of related to like, you know, Brewster's Millions, where like have to spend all this money by like the end of the year. So they just did it to be able to leverage it. And so like now you're not just thinking PowerShares, you're thinking Invesco. And this, you know, spills down to a lot of different products, not just the Qs.
Okay, Eric, what would you do?
I mean, what I would do is what they did exactly. I think putting Invesco in the name, so at least you get Invesco in those advertisements. Because my, you know, when there's other unit and trusts out there, and I feel like even though they advertise, they would rather advertise with their lower products that need it more or that are more timely, but at least they get the name in there. And I think what they did was interesting. So I want to steal Katie's thunder, but they created QQQM, which is again like a total carbon copy. It's the same thing. It's 5 basis points cheaper.
When you say same thing, tell me what is it? Because is it the same index? And what is the index and what's in it?
It tracks the NASDAQ 100 just like the Qs does. So it launched an exact competitor to itself, which again is unusual, but I get it. I mean, I can see why. You know, iShares did something not exactly the same, but when they launched their core series, we've seen people clone things. Like Spider has they have a SPY, and they also have like a cheaper version of SPY that people don't really know about, but it's like way cheaper. This isn't the first time it's happened, but you have seen these companies sort of get creative in a way that they can continue to offer cheap products, but at the same time, maybe make a little more money for themselves. And I look at this as one of those moves that is, again, not unprecedented.
If you're in the know, why would you buy QQQ instead of QQQM, which is kind of a little bit of what you're describing? Like, if I can get the exact same thing for cheaper, why wouldn't I?
Well, I mean, I've been looking at gold ETFs for the past few months because of the spot Bitcoin race. I find those equal parallels. And GLD still is a massive monster ETF, even though there's many cheaper ones. If you get liquidity, you pretty much have like almost like an unlimited life in ETFs. liquidity is very hard to unwind, and there's bigger investors out there who prioritize liquidity above everything else. They don't really care that it's 5 basis points more expensive. That's why ETFs like EEM, EFA, GLD, and SPY, for that matter, are going to roll on for decades because of that liquidity. Now, over time, over 10, 15, 20 years, it's possible as these cheaper ones sort of chip away and get liquid themselves, there could be a turning point where QQQM gets more liquid than the Qs, and then it's gradually, then suddenly. And we're our team is actually looking at, will that ever happen with SPY? Because it is starting to happen with EEM and IEMG. But for now, the liquidity is so much more massive with the Qs that it's probably only going to appeal to the advisor world for the time being.
Katie, so QQQM, couple years old. Mm-hmm. How's it going so far?
It's doing pretty well. I mean, it launched October 2020. I believe it's already up to $14 billion in AUM. So that's a very successful launch. But, you know, we're talking about $200 billion for the Q. So not quite comparable yet. But, I mean, to piggyback off what Eric is saying, the Qs, like SPY, trades like water. So institutional investors, that's where they want to go for liquidity. But if you talk to Invesco about why they chose to launch QQQM, I mean, they'll tell
and you.
You
did. Yeah.
I did. They'll tell you
this
that
is good old reporting.
That revenue streams are important to them. Surprise, but also it is geared towards a different type of investor. If you're a buy and hold investor, you care about that 5 basis points, and you're probably going to buy QQQM over the traditional Qs because you don't necessarily need all that liquidity.
Right.
But by the way, Joel, just to add some data behind what Katie just said. So that $14 billion is, that's a fast $14 billion. I was shocked it got that big. So $14 billion, it basically has 1/14 the assets of the Qs already. That's not bad. But it still has 1/113 of the volume of Qs. So again, that speaks to, it's easier to grab land than sea in the ETF world, so to speak.
That's the first time you've ever said that. It's novel.
Land,
you like that?
Sea.
Yeah.
Land is assets. Sea is volume.
I'm going to
so
think about that
why,
for a while.
That's why we say the State Street and Spiders, they may be losing the land war, but they have a killer Navy. So I'll stop there.
Athanasios, let's talk about what else they have in this strategy, because it doesn't end with QQQM, right? It's like, how far can you take the Qs?
Yeah, they're trying to take it pretty far. And what I thought was really interesting about this is when you look at like S&P 500 ETFs, right? They're like 2 basis points, 3 basis points. You're like, well, why are the Qs still 20 basis points? Invesco actually had an exclusive on this, so no one else could launch the Qs besides them. And so I'm guessing, you know, in the last couple of years, they came to some sort of agreement that they could start to expand this lineup. And they did. So now they have something like QQQJ, which is sort of like the up-and-comers that could get added to the NASDAQ 100 eventually. I forgot the other one.
There's also QQQS. That's the Invesco NASDAQ Future Gen 200 ETF.
Yeah, there's that one too. So now they've like got these, you know, little QQQ offsprings that, you know,
baby Qs.
Yep. Baby Qs.
Okay, so QQQM doing well. How about these other baby Qs?
They're doing okay. If you look at QQQJ, that also launched in October 2020, so the same time as QQQM. It doesn't have $14 billion, though. It has about $700 million, which is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. QQQS, though, that has just under $7 million, so not quite taken off yet. But that only launched last October.
Okay. Can I throw another one in here? You know, JP Morgan has, you know, JEPI, they have a NASDAQ version of that called JEPQ. This thing has $5 billion already. I mean, so it's, I guess you can use the index in certain ways if you're not Invesco.
Mm.
But JP Morgan is notoriously good, especially this equity premium suite they have of getting assets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to add, there's this other ETF, QQQE, which is equal weight NASDAQ 100 by direction. So, you know, there's some other non-tech names in there. So that one's like really
hardcore.
Yeah.
I want to bring this point up because on our team, and you know, being in data for all these years, we have to classify all these ETFs. And we've actually gone back and forth with whether the Qs is a tech fund or not, because it's only half tech about, but it just feels like a tech fund, right? So I think right now we do not have it as tech. Occasionally we will count it if we're looking, it depends on what we're working on. But it is interesting that it's not really anything, it's not beta, it's not a tech fund, it's just the companies that list on NASDAQ. And so it's its own little anomaly factor, I think, that again, makes it a real unique index.
Okay, so one thing that stood out to me was, as I was looking through the various offerings that Invesco had, I saw a ticker that was QQQE.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed that's not Invesco. Katie, what's that about?
That's Direction. That is an equal weight version of the NASDAQ 100. It's a very clever ticker. And I did ask Invesco about it, how they felt about it. And Anna Paglia was pretty clear
who is
the head of Invesco's ETF business. I forget her long fancy title, but she's the man, if you will. She said that it was a decision for them not to launch an equal weight version of the NASDAQ 100. And I will point out that QQQE launched in 2012. But she said that if you're investing in the Qs, she thinks of it as a thematic investment, and that if you were investing in the Qs, you want that mega cap exposure. So it doesn't make sense to dilute it by going equal weight.
So they were fine with having one QQQ that wasn't part of the family.
It is a good ticker, though.
It is. Yeah, I like that. Would you have let that one get away, Tom? Would you have let that one gotten away?
Yeah, I mean, you've got like the golden goose already, right? With QQQ, like they could have, you know. It's an interesting product, but they've already got the main one.
If you're investing with the Qs, I mean, you kind of want those juggernaut names to drive you, which everybody's calling them now the Super 7. So we're looking at Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, NVIDIA, Meta, Alphabet, Tesla. And those are the stocks at the top, which make up, I'm just going to guesstimate here, about 30-35% of the portfolio. And these are like, again, these are special companies formed by special founders. And I sometimes think that there's something about NASDAQ that attracts real, you know, workaholic, visionary, control freak type founder people, the Elon Musks, the Bill Gates, the Jeff Bezos. You don't get that in other countries. And I think that's the edge that the Qs has, which, by the way, over the past 10 years, the Qs has doubled the S&P 500. I mean, the S&P is a juggernaut and the Qs doubled it. And if we just did a run of all the mutual funds out there, all the active mutual funds, there's like 3,000. Only two have beat it over the past 10 years. So like 0.1%. And the one guy did it by just holding 40% of Tesla, which is almost like cheating. And then the other one is this weird small cap growth fund that we're still trying to figure out how exactly it pulled that off. But the point being is the Qs has basically beat everybody. So even though Athanasio has pointed out that 20 basis point expense ratio, in a normal ETF category, you'd think that'd be priced down by now. I would say 20 bips is cheap if you look at it as the best performing active fund for the past 10 years, you know, by far. That 20 bips is pretty low.
Athanasios, Katie, thanks for joining us on Trillions.
This is great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Trillions. Until next time, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you. We're on X. I'm at Joel Weber Show. He's at Eric Balchunas. Trillions is produced by Magnus Henriksen. But credit for this episode goes to Carmen Rodriguez. Sage Bauman is the head of Bloomberg Podcasts. Bye.